This is Dave Meltzer with the Entrepreneurs, the playbook at the greatest stadium ever built, even better than the Coliseum.
That's right.
My friend Owen, who's played there many a time and won national championships with my dear friends like Mr. Leinart and others. But Owen Hansen is here at SoFi Stadium, the greatest stadium so far ever built. That's a $1 billion screen. You don't even want to know what the Coliseum cost to build, but it was less than that screen, I promise you. Owen, welcome to the playbook.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's so awesome to have you because I actually remember you playing because we were recruiting players from USC, being the local notable sports agency, at Lee Steinberg.
Yeah.
And a lot of what we looked for was character. And there were certain players on your team that you played with that had character to win football games. But off the field, as USC and many other national champions, that people had some lessons to learn in character. And I was curious, from playing college football, obviously you learned a lot about discipline and character playing there. And your coach was Pete, or was it
Pete
John?
Carroll.
Yeah, Pete Carroll. What were some of the lessons early on in life that really resonated with you from learning character from Pete Carroll?
You know, discipline, you know, and showing up every day and giving 110%, you know, whether we were playing against Stanford or playing in the national championship game, whatever it meant, we always had to give 100%, 10%, no matter what. And as Pete Carroll, as a player's coach, he made it so much easier for us to adapt because you wanted to show up to practice. You didn't know if he was going to bring Snoop Dogg in one day or Will Ferrell. And it was so exciting for the team.
And in that experience, we have to, and I was a victim of this, temper our egos from the success that we have, especially when it comes early. And we have an unrealistic perception of success and of self because everyone around us is telling us how amazing we are. How did that impact your post-career character with so much influence of people that were building you up as fans, as sycophants, not as true friends?
You know, I would have to say it probably caused my downfall. You know, at the end of the day, you're playing at the highest level in college. And at the time, you got to remember, there wasn't an LA Rams or a Chargers team.
Yeah, so it was the professional team.
We were the professional team. And, you know, Matt was dating Paris Hilton at the time. Reggie was dating Kim Kardashian.
And that worked out well for both of them.
Yeah.
Matt's going to kill me for that.
So, you know, for me, I wasn't good enough to go to the league, and I'm around all my buddies that are signing these $20 million contracts, and I'm saying, okay, how am I going to be able to hang with these guys? What am I going to do to be able to fit in? And, you know, I chose a different path in life. And, you know, I said, how can I make that fast cash? And I got into the bookmaking business. I started a sports gambling website, and this was before it became legal, obviously. And this is where you gave a line of credit for $100,000, and if the guy didn't pay you, you had to send Guido a knock on the door. You know, so I chose that path because I knew it was fast cash and I had enough network with the USC network I had built with my fraternity brothers, my athletic friends, my teammates, and I was able to grow my business into this international scale.
Yeah, and what scale was that business when it came down? How big was it?
You know, I had about 2,000 customers betting weekly and, you know, we were making $1 million a month.
Yeah, it was real money.
Yeah, real money.
And to that end, it did fall down, and you know you had lessons to learn. And you know where was the shift? Because I always say some of the greatest entrepreneurs I know had that type of journey.
Yeah,
because it's very entrepreneurial to start a gambling website and to have 2,000 customers paying you $1 million. That's extremely entrepreneurial, and It for me, frustrates me because if you had a little bit of a longer runway, which you do now and the perspective you have, you'd be making $2 million a month doing something legal with the same energy and the same creativity and confidence as an entrepreneur. How did you shift your paradigm to say, maybe, you know, cutting in line, the shortcut, I always have to go to the back of the line. Maybe there's another way to use my skills, my knowledge and my desire to be successful, it's just going to take a little longer.
Yeah, slow and steady, right? Wins the race. And I teach that to kids that are in Pop Warner and tell them about my story. You know, I cut corners to try to get to the top. And I didn't get to learn who each one of my customers were. At the end of the day, I didn't care because I was making so much money. I didn't care, but I started taking bets for the most infamous cartel in the world. And I didn't know it at the time. I didn't care because my sub bookie, or I call it an agent, was collecting the money and I didn't need to do a background check. But I wish I would have looked into it, because later on in life, I start laundering money for this big cartel, Sinaloa cartel. And I get so deep into it. I'm laundering money for them at 10%. And, you know, I'm making $100,000 a day laundering $1 million for them. And then he gives me that call and he says, how would you like to make $1 million a day? And I'm like, I'm 26 years old at the time. Who doesn't want to make $1 million a day, right?
Right.
I was like, $1 million a day? You know, I'm a son of a construction worker. My mom's a librarian. I said, where do I sign up, right? And I remember El Jefe sent me to Australia, which is called the Golden Island. And
yeah.
I didn't know really what I was going to do, but I thought I was going to be handling money for him like I was handling in the U.S. And long story short, I ended up moving cocaine for him for $1 million a day. And I was too far deep into it. And I'm such an ambitious kid. I've always had my back against the wall my whole life.
Yeah.
But I'm always figuring out a way to make things happen. So when he told me, you have to move cocaine for me, I was like, okay. I thought back to $1 million a day, right? I was like, okay, well, I'm going to figure it out for $1 million a day. And that's what I did.
And have you had an opportunity to talk to Coach Carroll since your transformation?
Not yet.
Not yet.
I was at the stadium today.
Yeah.
The old equipment manager, Tino, he took us to the Coliseum and we got to walk it and we got to go to my old locker room. And I know Coach Carroll's there teaching, and I hope one day I can and speak to him and apologize, you know, for my actions. And yeah, at the end of the day, we all make mistakes.
For sure. And, you know, I'm thinking, as you were saying, $1 million a day, you know, where is everybody's timing and risk tolerance? You know, because it is a matter, it doesn't happen overnight, right? It's these little steps that you take in order to get to a place where now you have the government paying attention to you, not to the cartel, not to your agents, but they're paying attention to you. And they take their time to make sure they're gathering the data necessary to stop what you're doing, because it is illegal and it hurts people. Even though when we're 26, we don't realize in what world would a little bit more cocaine hurt people. Yeah. And I know that mindset at 26, and, you know, picking the shortcuts that we take, everybody takes them at 26. It's at what degree and what timing and risk tolerance. Was there any fear of being caught when you were deep into it? Or was it like a lot of people, you just get so into it, you forget about the risk?
You know, there was fear, trust me. Halfway into my trip in Australia, I had this guy laundering the money for me that worked for me at a fee. He was a consultant, and I paid him 25% to launder the money through the casinos.
Yeah.
And he did great. $1.5 million in 48 hours. I was like, okay, this is our guy. And I'm telling El Jefe, I got the guy. Don't worry. This is going to be smooth sailing.
You get to talk directly to El Jefe?
Everything through encrypted emails.
Wow.
Never on the phone.
Yeah.
When I say the phone, I'm just like...
Did that ever scare you that it might cost you your life dealing with that guy?
I knew I was dealing with someone powerful, but I was so ambitious at the time. I was like, who cares, right? I'm a young athlete that has a set of balls on me, right? At the end of the day... I knew.
Big set, like King Kong size. Yeah. I'm getting nervous just talking about this man. And I was the user. Right? I was a little eight ball of your just probably going over here.
But
with a bunch of your friends that played at USC. Yeah, not Matt Leiner, but others.
Matt.
Right. Yeah.
Matt liked the cocktails, but not the blow.
But other linebackers.
Yeah, exactly. So I was more nervous when what happened was this gambler that was working for me lost $2.5 million of the cartel's money. And it was my face on the line. So I had to go back to El Jefe. And the same day that $2.5 million got lost, one of my runners got picked off with another $700,000. So I lost $3.2 million in one day of the cartel's money. And now I'm like, okay, this is going to be a problem, right? I put my face on. My dad taught me as a kid, you pay back what you owe someone. And if that's ethics 101, you know? We believe in integrity in our family, and you do the right thing and pay that man back. And even though I know it's illegal activity, I still stuck my face in the line. And I remember that day, I was like, man, I'm going to get killed.
Yeah.
I said, I can't tell this guy on an encrypted phone I lost $3.2 million of his. There's no way. He's not going to believe me. So I messaged him. I said, hey, El Jefe, I need to see you in person. I said, there's something that's serious that happened. He's like, well, where's my money? I need it dropped off in L.A. right now. I'm like, it's about that money. Can I see you in person? And that's what I did. I got in my car and I drove to Tijuana. And he flew in on his private plane with 10 of his Sicarios. And they picked me up at right when I crossed that bridge in Tijuana. I got picked up by his Sicarios and they took me to this private restaurant in a town called Puerto Nuevo.
I know it well.
Yeah. In Rosarito, right?
Yeah,
right,
man. After. The lobster town, man.
And I'll never forget.
Best fried lobster in the Bison Region. Ortega's number two.
Yeah, or number one, right? Puerto Nuevo number one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I sat
right
there.
Past Gaviota.
Yeah, past Gaviota. I sat there with
not that I was hanging out the cartel. I just like lobster. I grew up in San Diego. I'm too much of a pussy.
So I sat at this table. The whole restaurant was closed down. And El Jefe's sitting there with his men. I'm like, okay, well, this is where I'm going to get killed, right? These guys have AK-47s, bulletproof vests. I mean, it's like out of the movies. And I'm sitting there and I'm telling the story. I said, Google it. It's documented now in Australia. It talks about this guy losing the money, and he said, "I already know." He called me Weto. Weto's like young white boy. He said, "Weto, I already know."
Either gringo or
Weto. Yeah, he said, "I already know." He goes, "But listen, Weto, you don't owe me $3.2 million anymore." He says, "You owe me $4 million now. You work for me full time." He says, "You're going to take 2 years off from anything with the money laundering, the drugs." He says, "Run your sports book like you've never ran it before." He says, "I think we have a little heat on us since this guy lost the money. He might be going to the feds." And he's right. The whole time now, the feds are starting to watch me. But
right.
I don't know. But El Jefe tells me, just focus on the gambling. So I went back to my gambling operation. And, you know, I'm making money. But I'm not paying back El Jefe because I need to keep that money going for my business. I need to keep that business running. It's a well-oiled machine. You never know if a guy hits you for $1 million on a five-team parlay. You have to have your reserves.
Yeah.
I remember 2 years later, and guess what? El Jefe messaged me on that encrypted phone. He says, "What, are you ready to go to work?" He goes, "It's time to pay me back." I said, "Oh man, fuck, what do I got to do?" He's like, "Well, now you got to get my cocaine into Australia and you're not using my routes. You got to figure out." So, oh man, how am I going to get cocaine in Australia? You know, it's the hardest part in the world to get anything into. I don't know if you've ever been to Australia.
Yeah.
It takes 17 hours in a plane.
No, right. You stop in Fiji.
3 months on a boat.
Stop in Fiji. Yeah. Though, I know, right?
So like I said, I've been the underdog my whole life. I'm the comeback kid. I'm like thinking of these ideas. How am I going to get it in there? And so the first round, I took a case of wine from Napa Valley, and I dumped the wine out. And then I took 150 proof Everclear, and I put it in the bathtub, and I just dumped it. And then I took the 10 kilos of pure cocaine from El Jefe, which came from Colombia, and I put it in that bathtub, and I'm in the bathtub with this big spatula. You know, those ones you row your boats with, and I'm in there, and I'm breaking it down.
An oar.
Yeah. So it's an oar, yeah. So I'm in there, and I'm breaking it down, and I'm taking these funnels, and I'm pouring it back into these bottles from Napa Valley, okay? And I'm cleaning them out with white alcohol, and I'm putting the corks back in and melting it on top of the wine, and I'm making it look like it's wine from Napa Valley. And I call my runner and I said, "Hey, I need you to pick up this wine and you need to drive to Napa Valley and you need to send it from this winery." And it was the same winery that I just created this liquid cocaine. And it was a test run, right? It was 10 kilos just to see if it worked. And my people in Australia said, "Hey, mate, we got good news. It arrived." I said, "Okay, well, good. Wow, okay." So
yeah.
I'm like, "Okay, I think I could pay this guy back," right? And I tell El Jefe, I said, "Hey, good news, our first round of 10 kilos made it." And I knew that I was selling $100,000 a kilo. That was 1.2 million. No, it was at 1 million because it was 10 of them. And I knew that 50% of that was going towards El Jefe for his costs. And then my 50% was 500,000. So slowly but surely, I was going to pay this guy off. And guess what happened? The guys in Australia now started to tax us because they saw how much money we were making.
Sure.
So they said, "Okay, you want to do that? Guess what? We want 50% now." So now my profits just went from making 50,000 to 25,000.
Yeah.
So I'm like, "Man, what am I going to do now? I can't pay him back that fast." And El Jefe says, "Well, you better figure out a way because the clock's ticking." And this whole time, you got to remember the FBI is watching me. I'm running my sports gambling website. I got runners that are getting picked off left and right, dropping off money. And they said, "Hey, we got picked off by organized crime task force." I'm like, "Man, these guys are on me, right?"
Yeah.
I'm like, "What am I going to do?" And I'm just like, "I got to get El Jefe paid back. That's all I care about. I don't care about the FBI.
I'm
saving my life, my family's life. They know everything about me." And so next, I go to my fraternity brothers at USC. They're in the import-export business of European chocolate. And they ship it from the UK, and then they distribute it throughout the United States, this European chocolate. So I went to this fraternity brother. He was an SC, and I said, hey, I got an offer you can't refuse. He says, what is it? I said, I'm going to give you $50,000 a month. All I want is your expired chocolate. He goes, no problem. When do you want to come over, right?
Yeah.
So he's got pallets and pallets of this expired chocolate. I said, just leave it there. I said, I'm going to have some people come in after hours. I said, we're going to load them. And we're going to ship them out. And I said, that's all I need. He goes, okay, well, we want to be there. So he's there, and we're jamming these kilos throughout these pallets of chocolate, right? And we send them to Australia. And Australia goes, mate, we can't find them. I said, what do you mean you can't find them? He said, we think customs took them. I said, no, bullshit. I said, go to box 13, section 22. I said, that's where the first one starts. And they go down there like, holy shit, mate, you fucking hit it great. And, you know, they're like, they couldn't believe it. So I figured out another way to get it in. And through the next, you know, this is 2013, 2014, all the way up to 15, about 2 weeks before my arrest, I finally paid El Jefe back the $4 million. And he asked me the million-dollar question. What do you want to do? What do you want to do? You know, I feel like I owe the guy, right? He didn't kill me. I said, whatever you want to do, Jefe. If you want me to keep working, I'm going to keep working. I owe that to you. And he says, well, let's keep working. And sure enough, 2 weeks later, I get arrested by the FBI with 15 FBI agents popping out of the bushes. I was on the Aviara Country Club in Carlsbad.
Yeah. Oh, well.
And I saw that helicopter, and I'm not going to lie, man. As soon as they put those handcuffs on me, David, I was like, finally, it's over, right?
Yeah,
I was like,
relief.
What a relief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear that a lot.
Yeah.
And so you get sentenced.
So I get sentenced.
For how long?
I get sentenced to 21 years. I ended up doing 10 years, and I got 10 years probation. I'm currently living in the federal halfway house right now. I got to pass to come
see you. Yeah, how to get permission. Yeah. How to get permission to come see us.
Yeah, I had to get signed off by the warden.
And but you learned all these lessons.
Yes.
And you are very entrepreneurial.
Very.
Right? Like, if I could see that resume and you had a clean slate and you said, look, this is, Dave, what I used to do and I didn't get caught, right? If that was your history, and came to me and say, hey, man, this is what I'm able to do, but I don't want to do anything illegal. I want to work for you and sell coaching.
Yeah.
I'm like, hired.
Yeah.
Right? I want to sell franchise. Hired. Right? If you can get that shit the way you did, like, think about it. What an extraordinary entrepreneur. But you knew that, and you started a business in prison.
In prison.
What kind of business?
Protein ice cream.
Protein ice cream.
Yeah.
In prison.
In prison.
And you actually have distribution,
I have
product.
Distribution, everything now. I've set up in prison. It was obviously a lot more difficult. I'm not going to lie.
You should see some of these pictures.
Yeah, there's videos.
Yeah.
There's killer. Videos on my Instagram and stuff. But
so good.
We're living in a 6x8 cell. So we have to get creative. Like I said, I had to get creative with the wine, the chocolate. So I started to think of a concept. If I could make a protein shake, I put slices of bananas, swirl some peanut butter from the commissary. I said, how could I lock it up? So I said to myself, coffee creamer. We get coffee creamer in the commissary. So I put a couple scoops of coffee creamer. I shook it up. And then I put them in these mop buckets. We get these mop buckets to clean our cells. And I got the rock salt because they use the rock salt to melt the ice from the snow. So every summer, or every winter, I'd...
Where was the prison?
Colorado.
Colorado, okay.
Yeah. And I'd tell the guy, hey, I need all the rock salt. I said, I'm going to give you an ice cream a week, and I'm going to give you $20 a week. I said, don't sell the rock salt to anybody. I want it all. And I monopolized the rock salt so I could make my ice creams. And I said to myself, okay, now let's make this thing lock up. So I'm in the cell literally with six of these peanut butter jars full of ice cream. And I'm in there literally shaking the ice and the salt for hours, like 4 hours. I'm like, man,
you got nothing else to do.
You know? So I'm making it, and all of a sudden it locks up. And I'm like, dude, I think I'm onto something. And I try it. I'm like, man, that's fine. Protein ice cream right there. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
So I have these guys I'm working out with. I got a Navy SEAL that's in there with me, a Marine. So all fitness guys. And I'm like, here, try this. Tell me what you think. And they're like, oh, man, this is fire. You should sell this. I'm like, no one's going to buy that. Who's going to buy it? Right? He's like, dude, you're the only one that's ever made ice cream on this compound. Why don't you sell it? And it's protein. It's healthy. I'm like, what am I going to sell it for?
Cigarettes.
So in prison, everyone buys a flat book of stamps every week.
Okay.
And I said, okay, if I could keep the stamps for myself and then I use the dollar to reinvest in the business, I said, that's what I'm going to do. And you're probably asking, what am I going to do with all these stamps, right? Well, I had 10,000 flat books of stamps. And I sent every one of those flat books home because I said, how am I going to compete with Jeff Bezos? This guy's a genius, right? The guy's, he's on Amazon and he's sending the book for free. I'm like, how am I going to compete if he's sending the book for free? I can't compete. Like, everyone's going to go and buy their book from Jeff Bezos, Amazon.com. I'm like, man, I can't compete. I said, okay, I'm going to use those stamps. I'm going to offer people to go on my website, The California Kid. I'm going to sign a personal message just like I did for you. I'm going to put it in my packaging. And guess what? I'm going to use those stamps that I've been using that I was making $15 on. So do the markup. It's cost me a dollar. And I'm
making 1,400%.
Good margins.
Not cocaine, but it's good margins. Cocaine.
Not as good. Yeah. And now for the next, you know, 10,000, I get out of every 5 stamps off that book, I can mail 1 book. So I get 4 books off of every flat book.
Yeah.
So now for the next 40,000 copies I sell, it's complimentary. Thanks to my ice cream business.
Yeah.
And I said, that's how I'm going to start the business. And then from there, I said, when I got out and I told my friend Roland the story, he's like, man, this is a hell of a story. He goes,
yeah.
Why don't we start making protein ice cream? And that's what we've done. We got California Ice Protein. I've created it from the halfway house. We attended the Fitness Expo 3 weeks ago. We sold 10,000 bars in like 6 hours.
They're really good.
And they're insane.
They taste really good and they're healthy.
They're healthy. And we use monk fruit as our sugar. All natural ingredients. We use a base of Greek yogurt to give it that yogurt / ice cream feel. And then we have a lactose-free bar with the fruit.
So good.
Yeah.
Real quick, last question, then we're going to take some questions from everybody because I know they're dying. This question is a common question. It's asked of me all the time, but I think it's most relevant for kids today. If you could do it over again when you decided that you needed to keep up with your friends that were professional football players because they were making fast money, but they earned it. The statistics aren't crazy, right? You know, if you know Reggie or Matt, the statistical success of being Reggie Bush or Matt Leinart, for every one of those guys, there's millions of David Meltzers that dreamed about, and they worked hard. David Meltzer's in the world to be a below average college football player.
Yeah.
I worked my ass off,
absolutely.
Right? What advice would you give yourself when you were given that first opportunity to make fast cash versus using incredible skills that you had to play the longer game?
Know your customer. Know who you're doing business with, right? Do a background check. Everybody I've ever been working with in my sports gaming business, I always did a background check on that person just to make sure they had the financials to pay their marker if they lost. But I was so happy about that fast cash coming from the Sinaloa cartel. And I'm talking duffel bags, right?
$250,000
duffel bags.
Like Mike Tyson.
I don't care about, I'm not caring who this guy is. I'm so excited. Like I said, I'm a young kid. So if I would have done my research and realized, know my customer, then I wouldn't have been in the trouble. And I find it happens with a lot of people. Look at the guy from Binance, CZ.
Yeah.
I was with him at the halfway house and the same thing happened with him. You know, he got a charge for this money laundering because he didn't get to know his customer.
Yeah.
And that's a very common thing in business.
At a higher level, I always say surround yourself with the right people and the right ideas, no matter how old you are, where you are, or what you want to do. A new California kid's in town, and he's doing good things with good products to help good people. Everybody can change.
That's right.
We all learn lessons. Like I said, the human experience has two guarantees. One, you're given a body, and two, you're here to learn lessons. It's what you do with those lessons in the long run that's going to make the difference. And I applaud you, Owen, for what you're doing. You have a long life ahead of you, and I think your story is going to impact tons of people, and I have no doubt that you're going to make more money selling protein and ice cream legally than you did the other ice cream. All right, this is Dave Meltzer at the greatest stadium ever built. Both of us never got to play here, but we're here today helping more people, making more money, and having more fun. Check out The California Kid. Owen Hansen has written it, and it's available on Amazon. So instead of buying Bezos' book, buy this one.
That's right.
Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Q&A.
Oh, yeah.
Milan.
So, for those of you guys who don't know, David has a brand called Ferocious Buddha. And that brand, I believe, is about kind of having balance and having calm, like keeping yourself calm while also being ready to strike and put the decision when the moment's right, pushing yourself out there and being a Buddha. You gotta keep that ferocious side to you. and you also have to, you know, keep the balance. I wanted to ask for someone like you, right? When the world's coming down on you, when things are pushing, and you know, it might seem like there's no one to turn, or you're kind of like stuck in a corner. What do you do to kind of put it into perspective that like there's all those bigger things where you gotta relax and like, you know, you're gonna get the moment to strike, but that moment you're gonna take after it, you're gonna be the Buddha. Kind of keep that balance between like outward action and inner peace.
I mean, I thought of it many times in that 6x8 cell. You gotta realize, okay, it doesn't get any worse here. So let's evaluate the situation that we're in and just think about it. Okay, we're alive, right? We're breathing. And that's the number one thing. If we're alive, we can do anything. And a lot of meditation, you know, getting up early, 30 minutes to yourself, and just realizing where you're at and what the future holds.
Awesome. Arby.
So I bring jiu-jitsu to gang members. And one of the things that I have a hard time trying to tell them is how to, like, convincing them that making an honest living is worth it because they do make so much money a day. What advice would you give to me to tell them that might help me better not having that experience that you have?
These guys are doing illegal activity, you think?
Oh, okay.
Okay. Okay. I would tell them that no one nowadays is flying below the radar. There's too many informants out there. There's people that are getting paid a lot of money to take you down. I remember there's an informant on my case that was getting paid like 20% of whatever they were able to collect. So people are getting paid by the federal government to go in on you. And there's no honor anymore. That's the new generation. The way the government, they scare you so bad, they're going to tell you you're going to have a life sentence, and every one of your friends is going to tell on you. I had 23 people on my indictment, and every one of them pointed the finger at me. And at the end of the day, that's what's going to happen, because no one wants to go to prison forever. So I would tell them, listen, you're not going to keep going. And tell them about the California kid. Because I thought I was going to keep going forever. I thought I was going to be able to outsmart the government. But these guys have so many confidential informants and rats and people that work on their payroll, there's no way you're going to beat them.
Thank you. Sure. Thank you. Everybody, let's give a big round of applause. Owen Hansen.